Welcome to this week's Investors Chronicle Personal Finance Podcast. I'm Lenora Walters, and joining me today is Rachel Winter, Associate Investment Director at Killick & Company. When putting together an investment portfolio, it's very important to diversify it, which means holding different types of assets. Historically, a popular asset for mitigating downside in times of difficulty, providing a different return profile to equities, and even protecting against inflation has been gold. But Rachel, is exposure to gold still a good way for investors to diversify their portfolios?
Well, I think it depends on what type of investor you are. If you are, for example, an income investor, then I don't think gold is a good idea for you because gold doesn't pay any income whatsoever. If you are an investor who wants to protect against inflation, then possibly gold will be a good option for you. Gold is classed as a real asset, and over the long term, in theory, it should protect against inflation. In recent years, we haven't seen much performance in gold. I'd say the stock market has far outperformed gold. And I think the performance of gold has actually been quite surprising in recent years. Normally, because it is seen as quite a cautious asset, you would expect it to move in the opposite direction to equities. So when people are feeling confident, they tend to buy equities and sell gold. When they're feeling nervous, they tend to sell equities and buy gold. So you'd hope that the prices would move in the opposite directions. But over the last couple of years, I think we've seen a bit more correlation between the two. So, for example, over the last month or so, both equities and gold have come up. And therefore, I'm not sure that you are getting quite the kind of diversification that you might be after.
On that note, gold, certainly this morning, was trading at over $1,500 an ounce. Is this a historically high level? And if so, should you totally avoid investing in it at the moment?
It certainly has had quite a good run, particularly over the last year. And I believe within the last 3 years, it's been down at around 1,100. So it has come up quite a lot within that time period. But if we go back to 2011, gold was over $1,800 an ounce. So it's not actually that close to its historic record high. So I'm sure there are some investors out there who believe it could go higher. And something we've seen over the last couple of years is a growing appetite from central banks to hold more gold as reserves. So I think that potentially could push the price higher over the coming years.
I suppose despite perhaps some of the issues there, if you decide that having an allocation to some gold in your investment portfolio is appropriate for yourself and your investment purposes, what's a good way to get exposure to this asset?
I think the most common way is something called an ETC or an exchange traded commodity. That's essentially acting in the same way as an ETF or an exchange traded fund, but it focuses purely on one particular commodity. I would have a strong preference for a physically backed ETC. And that essentially means that when you're buying into this, there is some physical hard gold in the background there. And that's what the price of the ETC is based on. You have got an option to buy something called a synthetic ETC. And if you're buying that, then what you're buying is essentially a combination of financial contracts that are essentially mimicking the price of gold. And to date, they have mimic the price of gold quite well. But what we don't know is how they would perform in a period of strong market volatility. I think this whole concept of synthetic ETFs is a fairly new one, and we haven't really seen how they would perform in a period of severe market difficulty. So I think I would have a preference for that physically backed ETF because you know there's a nice solid lump of gold in the background there for you.
Even physical sounds like a better option, but are there any risks with the physical ETC that you should also be aware of?
I think something to bear in mind is you might potentially have a slightly higher cost over time because you have got some physical gold there to store. So I think that's the main thing to bear in mind. The other risk, I think, is simply what happens to the price of gold. And that's a risk that you would also have with the synthetic ETC as well. So I think just price volatility is definitely something to be concerned about. I think historically people have viewed gold as a very cautious asset, but over the last 5 years, it has been quite volatile. So earlier we talked about the price history. Between 2011 and say 2016, the price did come down from $1,800 to $1,100 per ounce. And that really is quite a severe fall. And if you are quite a cautious investor, I think that fall would have been very difficult to handle. So I don't think gold is quite as cautious as some investors would make it out to be.
Are there any particular gold ETCs that you think are worth using if you're going to get exposure?
Yeah, huge range here. Lots of different ETCs. So I would look at the ones that are physically backed, and then I would look at the ones that do offer the best total expense ratio. One that we quite like is the WisdomTree ETC. That's got a fairly low annual charge of about 0.19%.
Okay. Now, we've been talking about ETCs, but there are other ways to get exposure. And if you invest, no doubt you'll have seen there are lots of what appear to be gold funds. Now, in fact, these are actually equity funds, but that invest in the equities of mining companies that specialise in gold. So what would be the reasons to consider adding one of these mining security funds to your portfolio?
Well, in theory, if you think the price of gold is going up, investing in a company or a share that actually produces gold should give you a more amplified return. So if the price of gold is going up, any company that's producing gold is going to be selling that gold for a higher price and making more profit. So if you're investing in the shares of that company, you should get a much higher return in theory. Something else is that often gold mining companies will pay a dividend. So if you are an investor who wants a dividend, then that could potentially be an option for you. But on the other hand, I would say that gold mining companies don't always perform as you would expect. And an example here is Fresnillo. It's a gold mining company listed on the London Stock Exchange. While the price of gold itself has gone up quite heavily over the last few months, the price of Fresnillo shares has come down quite heavily. The reason for that, well, there are a number of reasons. They've had some difficulties with a mine in Mexico. They've seen quite an increase in the costs of getting the gold out of the ground. And I think also there is a huge trend towards not investing in companies that are damaging the environment. And I think a number of investors might view a gold mining company as a company that would be damaging towards the environment.
Bearing this in mind, how good are mining securities funds as diversifiers, let's say, to a standard equity portfolio? And what are their risks? Other than what you mentioned,
I think they are a different asset class. They do offer a different revenue stream. I think because they are invested in equities, I think they would offer you less diversification than investing in gold itself. So I would say that a gold mining fund invested in gold mining companies would be more likely to correlate with the equity market than a gold ETC. So if you truly did want diversification and a lessening of risk, I would say that a gold ETC would be a better option. If you're someone that has a high appetite for risk and really believes that gold is going up and you want to make a higher level of profit and you can accept the risk, then perhaps a gold mining fund would be a good option for you.
Okay, now we've talked about ETCs and we've talked about funds that invest in the shares of gold mining company. But if you, you know, if you're a private investor, some ordinary individual, are there any other ways in which you can get exposure to gold?
There are a number, and there are some ways that are actually outside of the stock exchange. For example, you can simply buy things like gold coins, and those can be looked after, and they clearly are made of pure gold, so they would mimic the price of gold. A concern there is the security, so they could be lost or stolen. You have also got the option to buy gold directly via the Royal Mint. So if you have got a pension, particularly a SIP, you have got the option to invest in gold with the Royal Mint, and they will take care of storing that and looking after that for you. But then you have got the added cost of the ongoing storage of that commodity.
Another diversifying asset that's been favoured by investors is UK commercial property. But there's still a lot of uncertainty surrounding UK assets due to lack of clarity over the nature of our country's departure from the European Union. So, Rachel, do you think it's worth having any exposure to UK commercial property at the moment?
I do, in part. I would highlight there's been a huge divergence in the fortunes of different types of commercial property. So I don't think anyone will be surprised to hear me say that UK retail property has been a very, very poor performer over the last few years. And that's still an area with some concern. We've seen only this week that Beals, the department store, is the latest of many retail outlets to go into administration. So I think that's a huge concern for investors in retail property. I would have a look at commercial property involved in logistics warehouses. I think that's one area of the UK market that has still got a huge amount of opportunity for growth. I think we saw today that the results from ASOS, the online shopping business, were incredibly strong, and that just highlights the demand for online shopping. Therefore, we know there is going to be future demand for these logistics warehouses. So that's one area of the UK commercial property market I would be happy to consider. Another one that seems to be quite strong at the moment is actually office space, particularly around London. We've seen this week that Facebook has announced it's going to be employing 1,000 more people in the UK. And in fact, we have seen another large number of companies doing the same thing. So there does seem to be an ongoing demand for London-based office space, and commercial property funds offering that do seem to be doing very well.
If you invest in commercial property, again, this was a bit like with the debate about the gold funds, would it be better to have a fund that actually buys the buildings, a physical property fund, or a fund that buys shares in companies involved with commercial property, a property securities fund?
Again, I think it depends what type of investor you are. If you are going to invest in a fund that actually buys the finished properties, that's probably going to be better for income over the longer term. And arguably, you would say it was slightly less risky because you have got some physical assets there. You have got some underlying properties actually propping up the value of that fund. So if you are someone who wants an income and you don't want to take a huge amount of risk, I would invest in a commercial property fund or a real estate investment trust. If you are going to invest in the types of companies that are actually building these commercial properties, yes, you could make a lot more profit in times of economic growth when a lot of building is happening. But I would say those types of investments are much more cyclical. They are going to be much more volatile according to how the economy is performing. And therefore, I would say those investments are more risky. And you could say that at the current period of time, we are perhaps moving towards the end of an economic cycle. So I would wonder whether or not now is the right time to be investing in those types of assets.
Okay, and would it be fair to add that actually property securities aren't really such a good diversifier away from equities, or because ultimately they are equities?
Technically, I think most investors, when analysing their portfolios, would generally put real estate investment trusts into the non-equity category. And I believe that is because they are physically asset-backed and they have got that good income there as well. So generally, I would say that commercial property funds have offered a lower degree of volatility compared to equities. And that's the reason why a number of investors do like to include them in their portfolios.
Okay. Now, another big question with property is what type of fund you use to access it. Property, physical property, you know, is a fairly illiquid asset, especially commercial properties, sort of big skyscrapers and warehouses, and you can't sell it in 5 minutes. So is it better to access it with a closed-end fund, such as an investment trust or a real estate investment trust, or an open-ended fund?
I would say a closed-ended structure like a real estate investment trust. I just don't think an open-ended structure is suitable at all for an asset like commercial property. It's very difficult for the fund managers to actually sell the property quickly. And what's more, they can't just sell a little bit of a property when an investor in the underlying fund wants to have their money back. An entire property has to be sold. For this reason, the fund manager is always forced to have a large cash balance available in case anyone wants their money back, and you're not really getting any kind of return on that large cash balance. So I would say that a closed-ended structure, such as a real estate investment trust, is much more appropriate for this type of investing. And we've seen in recent months, the M&G property fund, that's one of the largest open-ended commercial property funds in the UK, because they saw such a large level of withdrawals leading up into the general election, they actually had to gate that fund and prevent investors from taking their money out. And that's something that wouldn't have happened with a closed-ended structure.
Okay. That said, I suppose investment trusts, real estate investment trusts, are far from risk-free. So what should people be aware of before putting a penny into one of these listed property funds?
The risk is that if lots of people want to sell, they will sell the shares in the investment trust on the open market. And what you could have would be the fund falling to a discount. So while you can always get your money back, there is absolutely no guarantee that you'll be able to get the price that you want. Mm. So if you are going through a period when lots of people are trying to sell out of these things, then if you do want to sell, you might be selling at quite a poor price. So you have certainly got the possibility there of ongoing volatility.
Okay. And are there any particular commercial property funds that you'd highlight?
Yes. Our preference is one called London Metric. So it's a UK-based real estate investment trust. They do invest across quite a range of different properties, but the largest part of their exposure is to those logistics warehouses that we talked about earlier. So we think that's a part of the market that does have a huge opportunity for growth. The management team of London Metric do appear to be very strong indeed. The track record of the trust has been very strong. And also you've got a nice dividend there of over 3%.
Okay, thank you, Rachel. Some really helpful suggestions. Now, investment analysts have expressed concerns in recent months about the size of LF Linseltraen UK Equity Fund and its led analysts in particular at Interactive Investor, an investment platform, to conduct a review of the fund, though now that they've done it, they're actually more confident on LF Linseltraen UK Equity. But Rachel, more generally, how important do you think a fund size and its ability to trade its holdings are?
It's incredibly important. And this is a big issue that has come to light because of this whole fiasco we've had with the Neil Woodford funds.
Mm.
So I think everyone here will know by now that Woodford took very, very large stakes in private companies and companies without much liquidity. And when investors wanted to sell out of his fund and get their money back, he wasn't able to sell the underlying holdings. And I think because that has caused such a huge problem, people are now going around looking at other funds, and rightly so, in order to see exactly how liquid those funds are. For me, it shouldn't necessarily be an issue if a fund becomes particularly large. What's really important is what kind of stake is that fund taking in the underlying companies? If it is taking a very large stake, then you could well find that it would be difficult for the fund to sell out of all of the shares of that company if investors did want their money back. So really, we want to be investing in funds that are taking a fairly small stake in the underlying companies.
Okay. And would the size and liquidity profile of a fund deter you from, say, investing clients in it?
It would do. So if we believed that the underlying holdings within a fund were not liquid, that would certainly put us off investing. But that doesn't always relate to the size of the fund. So if we look at a fund like Fundsmith, for example, that's been incredibly successful and it now is an absolutely huge fund. However, the companies within the fund are also absolutely huge. There are companies in there that have market capitalizations of many hundreds of billions. Therefore, even though Fundsmith is a very huge fund, it doesn't own a significant stake in the underlying companies. And therefore, we're not concerned that the investments couldn't be sold if investors did want their money back.
If you're an investor and you may have been holding a fund for a while and it's okay fund and you're happy with it, but then see it's grown considerably in size, what should you do?
Have a look at what size it's grown to. Have a look at the underlying companies within the fund and see how large those companies are. And I think I would be concerned if I saw that a fund owned more than 3% of any one of the underlying companies. I think that's quite an important level there.
Okay, thank you, Rachel. Some really helpful points. That brings us to the end of today's show. But see this week's big theme in Investors Chronicle or the website at investorschronicle.co.uk for our full report on how to access golden commercial property and more on LF Linseltraen UK equity and liquidity risks. Thank you for listening and have a good weekend.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to. Courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.